This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, sitting in for Cynthia Canty. The legislature has been discussing eliminating the prevailing wage law. That law basically says if a government entity plans to build something, the contractor must hire workers at union-scale wages. To talk with us about that are Chris Fisher, he's president of Associated Builders and Contractors of Michigan, and Dale Bellman, a professor at the School of Labor and Industrial Relations at Michigan State University. Chris, let's start with you. Prevailing wage has been the law for decades. Why do you argue the legislature should eliminate it?
Well, Lester, we have found the Michigan experience with prevailing wage to be rather troubling. Prevailing wage has resulted in government construction contracts costing more than private sector construction contracts. So when that occurs, there's naturally a fiscal accountability concern that arises, because if you have the same project in the private sector being performed by the same workers under the same conditions, subject to the same quality standards, subject to the same specifications, and to the same health and safety requirements, and yet it costs more, you have to wonder, why is there this misalignment between the private industry and the government construction industry?
So bottom line, it costs taxpayers more to build the same building.
It costs taxpayers a lot more.
So Dale, you write this won't save taxpayers money in the long run. Why is that?
It doesn't even save taxpayers money in the short run. Both the Legislative Audit Bureau of Wisconsin and Minnesota have reviewed the research. They find that prevailing wages have little to no cost on government construction. What we know they do is that construction wages are higher, more construction training goes on, and a number of public costs, because many construction workers are not covered by benefits outside of prevailing wages, costs such as paying public hospitals for uncompensated care, collection of taxes where employees are classified as independent contractors, so somehow taxes don't get paid on them. Things like that are avoided. There's also less leakage of income out of the state. States with prevailing wage laws have a much higher proportion of construction wages and profits remaining in state than states without that. That helps the state.
So, Chris, some other states don't have prevailing wages or prevailing wage laws, or they have a restricted sort of prevailing wage law. What evidence is there that these states are better off than Michigan is with it?
I think that we have seen a major misalignment between, as I said, the government sector and the rest of the industry. And we actually have found that there are studies suggesting that states are better off having repealed prevailing wage. University of California, Berkeley, Columbia University, the Legislative Service Bureau of Ohio, our neighboring state, just found that when prevailing wage was eliminated, there was a significant amount of tax savings to the tune of $500 million over a several-year period, as well as construction in Ohio on just the educational sector, as well as seeing an increase in the number of overall construction jobs that are created, because that's the big thing. When construction costs more money, you get less of it. And if we're able to instead reinvest that into vital infrastructure and vital civic needs in the construction-related needs, you're able to see a lot more construction activity occur. That's more people putting on hard hats every day, going to work, and rebuilding our state.
Now, Dale, you mentioned the quality of the labor force. We know that many unions and construction trades have training and apprenticeships that help justify those union-scale wages. What happens when free market forces dictate who builds?
One second, because I actually have to respond to Chris, because his organization is very big at picking studies with methodologies that don't work or looking at one set of studies rather than another. This discussion of costs is, as far as I can tell, bogus in the sense that he's citing a series of studies, and his website has a bunch more, that all follow a methodology been rejected by the Wisconsin Fiscal Audit Bureau, been rejected by the state of Minnesota, for a couple reasons. They're basically fabricated numbers. You assume that, for example, the study from Anderson for the U.S., which all of Chris's figures come from, say, we could save $225 million a year on school construction. And that's just wrong, because the first thing it does is assumes that blue-collar labor on construction projects is, that's 30% of our cost. It's 20%. They use the wrong cost figure. They use total capital expenditure, which includes things like desks for schools.
You're talking about Anderson Consulting's
study. Yeah, that's right.
It's
a bogus report. It basically produces a number that has no validity. And then if you say it often enough and loud enough, you make your campaign. What we need in the area of prevailing wage, as so many other areas, is some real careful thinking about public policy. Can the Michigan wage be improved? You bet. Our current system of setting prevailing wage needs reform. We could do it with surveys and other things. Our method of enforcing it, leaving it to public bodies that may have no expertise and no desire to enforce it, is also a problem. So there are reforms, but reform is very different from just saying, let's throw it away and suffer a lot of negative consequences for no gain. So I don't think that Chris has a serious study. He claims they're peer-reviewed, but being an academic, I haven't seen that.
We're never going to settle the study, whether the study's valid or not here. I do want to ask you, Chris, about the idea of, instead of scrapping prevailing wage, reforming it like Dale suggests.
In addition to the study questions aside, and again, I don't think that Berkeley or Columbia are bad organizations to be quoting, but I would add that there are different types of methodologies for determining a prevailing wage. Michigan is one of only six states that bases its prevailing wage on mirroring what is found in union agreements. 44 other states either don't have a prevailing wage or they use some different sort of methodology, including the federal government that has its own prevailing wage called the Davis-Bacon Act. But even there, I think we've seen significant flaws. The Department of Labor's Office of Inspector General, the Congressional Budget Office, the and other groups have even questioned its own federal government's prevailing wage mandate. We think the best practice is not to have this. In the private construction industry, the average construction rate of pay is higher than most other rates of pay
industry. You're saying you don't think reform would work. It has to be scrapped.
I think it needs to be scrapped. Michigan's already pays its construction workforce higher than most other industries. We're doing the right thing. We don't need to be the only industry saddled with this burden in the construction industry.
So are we going to see that? The legislature has talked about this before. They're talking about it again. Are we going to see that in this session? Either one of you.
I think that right now, as you know, there's a petition up front to repeal prevailing wage through a petition effort. The goal is to have those petitions turned in to the legislature later this year. And the intent of that is to have a final vote once and for all on the issue of prevailing wage. We're excited to see this opportunity occur to bring the public sector into line with the private sector. And we think ultimately prevailing wage is going to be up for a vote at the end of the year. And we think it'll be this fall when that happens.
Do you think that the typical citizen who might be signing a petition like that understands what prevailing wage is and what it does for the state?
They may understand what it is. What it does for the state, doubtful, because it does a lot of important things. One thing that I found in some research I'm working on is in the application of the prevailing wage to low-cost housing in California, it's central to the enforcement of basic employment law. Absent prevailing wage, which requires a certified payroll in, you know, low-cost residential, kind of the wild west of construction, it's the law that causes employers to have to classify employees as employees rather than independent contractors. So all of a sudden, they're covered by unemployment insurance. They have workers' compensation. They have Social Security payments. You're no longer able to use undocumented on those projects because of the record keeping. And in the end, that does increase costs of those projects by 6 or 7%. It also means that California collects taxes from those workers because they're not cash payments going to independent contractors. It's very valuable.
I want to get to a point that a lot of people have been talking about lately, and that's wage stagnation of the middle class. If you, one of the arguments for prevailing wage is, let's make sure that construction workers can make a decent living, and let's make sure that they're appropriately trained. So if we do away with prevailing wage, what's that going to do to that wage stagnation or that middle class pay that construction workers are getting now?
I think the best thing to look at is the actual instances where prevailing wage has been suspended or been removed. When Ohio removed prevailing wage on educational construction, not only were there taxpayer savings, but actually the rate, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the rate of pay continued to increase for the average construction worker. Right now in the private sector in Michigan, again, this is where prevailing wage wage does not apply. The average construction wage is higher than the average overall wage for the average worker in Michigan. So in other words, we're doing right by our construction workforce in our state. And as a result of that, we think that that would continue to be the case. But not only would that continue to be the case, we'd have more opportunity to reinvest into vital construction projects, projects where people are, again, being paid more than the average industry wage.
Dale?
The bottom line is that construction wages will fall total compensation by about 5% as a response to repeal of prevailing wage. And this has been found in studies by Larry Katz of Harvard, lots of other studies. We'll also lose coverage of insurance and other benefits. Our training systems will contract. I mean, right now, the building trades expend about $50 million a year in Michigan on training, partially supported by the apprentice exception in prevailing wage. Chris's organization spends less than $5 million a year. So it's very small. They have 350 versus 19,000 apprentices. More to the point, Chris is saying $22 an hour, $45,000 a year is a big wage. He's got to understand, yeah, that's more than McDonald's workers are paid. But McDonald's workers aren't trying to support families. If we use the Labor Department's methodology for calculating a kind of minimum decent living for two adults, two children, no savings, no restaurants, but covers health care, covers income, covers food and so on, in the Grand Rapids metro area, it's about $60,000 a year. Nothing too surprising in that. So if we have an average construction wage of $22 an hour, $45,000 a year, we don't have a minimum family sustaining wage. It's an industry that's second lowest in terms of pension coverage, in terms of health coverage. It's an industry that doesn't provide decent jobs to an awful lot of its employees. Prevailing wage won't solve that, but taking it away will make it worse.
I want to ask you a final question. In the past, the governor has said he's not interested in repealing prevailing wage. Has there been any signal from his office that his position might be shifting on this?
We're not 100% certain of the governor's position on prevailing wage, but again, there's an effort up front to repeal prevailing
wage. Take it to the ballot.
That's right. And I would add that construction is an opportunity industry. It is an industry that does treat its employees very well, and that prevailing wage repeal is simply going to reflect what happens in the real world. I think the best real world example of what things look like without prevailing wage is the real world itself, where it doesn't exist and where quality buildings are built every day, where families bring home a very sustainable living wage. And that's the best case scenario, and that's what happens in the real world. And we think it's time for the government sector to reflect that real world.
Yeah, the question was, the governor has said in the past he's against repealing prevailing wage. Do you think his position is shifting?
I really don't have information on that. I do know that his concern is that in terms of construction training, is that prevailing wage does support an extensive construction training system, and that its repeal will reduce that. It'll give less access to the better jobs in construction.
That's Dale Bellman. He's a professor at the School of Labor and Industrial Relations at Michigan State University. Earlier, you heard from Chris Fisher. He's president of Associated Builders and Contractors of Michigan. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Lester.
Thanks.